Welcome to a short walk around East Pulteney and a journey into American history. I'm Willem Lang, and I'll be your guide on a tour that explores three centuries of American history. Our walk today will take us through a village settled before the Revolutionary War and past an inn that hosted Ethan Allen's Green Mountain Boys. We'll peer into a gorge where water wheels powered the industries of the town. And along the way, we'll learn stories of village life and tragedy and explore the lives of two local boys who grew up to launch two of America's most renowned newspapers. A walk through East Pulteney offers a glimpse of what a typical, prosperous 19th century village looked like. A village centered on churches, schools, water mills, and industries. Originally designated Pulteney, this is a village that saw most of its growth in the early 1800s. By the 1850s, the center of population was moving down the road to the west, and the pace of growth here began to slow. This classic New England village green was left intact. It looks pretty much as it did 200 years ago. The unique triangular design dates to the original land grant of 1761 from the Royal Governor of New Hampshire. So let's get started. Best thing to do is park behind the Baptist Church and walk alongside this church toward the center of the green, near the bell. We'll give directions, but you'll want to find your location on the map and follow along on the tour. And feel free to wander. When you hear this sound, pause the podcast and follow the directions to the next location on the tour. You get lost, return to the previous chapter and your map. Today, the internet and a podcast may be the new tools for communication and entertainment, but Pulteney has always relied on up-to-date technology. In the early 1800s, the local news was spread at the meeting house and with a printing press. And here on the East Pulteney Green, we see how technology helped to create a community. Standing at the bell, take in the grand proportions of this church. With its airy belfry and its scale, the East Pulteney Baptist Church is considered one of the outstanding Vermont churches from its era. This is due to the craftsmanship of the designer-builder Elisha Scott, who built this church in 1805 as one of the village's earliest meeting houses. Scott based many of his designs on an architectural pattern book, The Country Builder's Assistant, by Asher Benjamin. This pattern book revolutionized early American construction when the settlers' rough cabins were being replaced with more stylish frame houses. Benjamin combined classic architectural style with house plans that dovetailed with America's rural and independent lifestyle. His widespread influence was due to new technologies for engraved printing, which meant that detailed builder's guides could be mass-produced. Around the green, many of the buildings you see shared the look of this pattern book and the 40 years of Scott's work. Start walking toward the church, and you'll begin to appreciate an architectural style noted for its detailed, many-paned windows and balanced proportions. This style is known generically as Georgian for the first four King Georges of England. But here in the colonies, a new style emerged, the Federal style, drawn from the work of a Renaissance architect, Palladio, who brought back ancient Greek and Roman design. The Federal style is best demonstrated in Thomas Jefferson's design of Monticello. One characteristic feature of the Federal architectural style is the Palladian window. You can see one there on the front facade of this church. Palladian windows combine a main window with an arched head flanked by narrow windows with square heads. Walk around the church to its rear facade and you'll see another Palladian window. Look around the green as you walk and you'll see several houses with windows and doors that echo this feature. More than half a century later, after the population center had moved west, the Baptist congregation split in two. and in the 1870s, the church bell was moved from East to West Pulteney. Some folks in East Pulteney claim that the bell, like the magic harp in Jack and the Beanstalk, tolled, "Stolen! Stolen! Stolen!" It wasn't till the 1980s, when the two congregations recombined, that the bell was returned to its current location here on the Green, where we imagine it no longer tolls out the guilt of its alleged theft by the rival Baptists. And through all these years, the Baptist Church has been holding services uninterrupted since it was first built in 1805. Now we'll continue our tour. From the back of the church, walk past the parking lot to where two roads join in a Y. Follow this road toward the river. Stop when you reach the bridge. Here at the Pulteney River, you can see why the village developed around this spot. Look to your left, upriver, to the falls, and you can feel the river's energy focused by this gorge. While the river no longer powers the wheels of industry, it was vital in the early days. Its force was harnessed to propel the water wheel that ran the first grist mill, built here in 1774. This was a great convenience to the villagers who previously had hauled their grain 30 miles to have it ground in Manchester. Now, as you walk here, be careful. This gorge can be hazardous. This bridge began as an open bridge, not so different from what it is today. But then a 10-year-old boy fell from the top of a hay wagon into the gorge. He didn't survive, and this calamity prompted the villagers to build a covered bridge. It remained covered till 1940, when it was replaced with the steel bridge you're standing on. Now, while this may seem a pretty small bridge, it forms a key historic connection. From here, a military road headed north to join with the region's original and most important highway, the Crown Point Military Road, which ran from New Hampshire across Vermont to Lake Champlain. Southbound, it connected travelers and trade to Lake St. Catherine and on to Albany. Now next, look to your right, downriver, where the floodplain opens up and the river flows slowly. If you look carefully at the right bank amid the vegetation, you'll see a pit cut into the rock and red slate where a water wheel was powered by the river's flow channeled through a flume. This was the site of a large mill wheel that powered the Dewey Carriage Factory, which remained in operation till the turn of the 20th century, when carriages became less important. By the early 1800s, dozens of mills were operating up and downstream of this point. Grist mills, a timber mill, a woolen mill, and a foundry. But a river's power isn't always an ally. The flood of 1811 would begin to change everything. Here's how Pulteney historians in 1875 remembered that flood. On the morning of the 22nd of July, 1811, the sun rose clear and the sky was cloudless. But by 10 o'clock, the rain was pouring down in torrents, and by 1 o'clock, it began to rain violently. The fall of water was very heavy. The small streams and little rills from the hillsides rapidly poured their falling waters into the Pulteney River. So sudden was the rise of water in the river that the inhabitants were hardly aware of danger before mills, dwelling houses, and other buildings were being swept away. Wrecks of buildings, bridges, machinery, and floodwood were constantly floating down, and now and then would come a large forest tree, taken up by the roots, brought along, and made to serve as a battering ram to demolish buildings or whatever obstructed its course. It was the worst flood in Rutland County's history. Every mill but one was gone, and every bridge on the Pulteney River was carried away, except this bridge at East Pulteney. Some of the mills were rebuilt, and on the left bank, you can see an example of this riverside industry in the old tannery building, with stairs down to the river. But the flood of 1811 changed the course of the river and thus changed the future of East Pulteney. The changes in the river created a new site for mill power in West Pulteney, and the success of this new mill site began the movement from East Pulteney to West. Within a few decades, West Pulteney would become the dominant town, to be known simply as Pulteney Village. And East Pulteney would remain much as it is today. Walk back toward the green, but stay to the left side of the street. Pause at the first white house. The four houses in this row reveal the range of architecture in the village. The first white house is known as the Phillips House, circa 1790. It blends two building styles, the solid massing of the porch and ornate decoration connecting the columns is typical of the home's original Georgian federal style. But in the 1840s, it was renovated with Greek Revival features that were then popular, such as the flat lintel above the front door. Note the wall, stacked with river stone. Next, walk to a house originally known as Mr. Thompson's Church. This meeting house is representative of the New England Plain style favored by the Congregationalists. It was originally built on the green around 1785 to house a splinter group seeking the orthodoxy that Mr. Thompson offered. But after the groups reunited, this building was moved here in 1802 to make room for the current Baptist church. The organization of the Congregationalist Church located all authority within the particular congregation. Often, even property ownership was limited to those who were elected. These social structures came to be known as the New England Way, and historians note this may have been key to both the stable settlement of this frontier and the eventual success of these self-organizing colonists in their rebellion against Britain. Now, the third house in this row is the Howe Dewey House, first built for John Howe, son of an early settler. It's a classic example of federal style and is one of the finest works of builder Elisha Scott, who, you'll remember, also designed the Baptist church across the street. The front entrance of this house demonstrates Scott's inspired design. The Palladian-styled entrance includes a fanlight window over the door and side-light windows on each side with unique clover and diamond shapes that are repeated in the window on the second floor, as well as in Palladian windows all around the green. The small home next to it was built by John Howe for his son. Alonzo Howe and his wife Betsy kept a store in the front of the house. Once a customer asked to buy a set of fine china on display, only to be told it wasn't for sale. When asked why, Alonzo reportedly said that selling the china would ruin his display. Alonzo ran a distillery and was once chastised for storing spirits across the street in the basement of the Baptist church. But once the village passed a law prohibiting the distillation of liquor, Alonzo both obeyed and enforced the law, as he was also justice of the peace. The brick building to the right of Alonzo's house is the Union Academy. The Union Academy may well be the oldest surviving schoolhouse in Rutland County and the second oldest in the state. It was constructed in 1791 and named to commemorate the year Vermont joined the Union as the 14th state. There's a story here of one diligent teacher, a Deacon Jocelyn, who posed a question about a country's location that stumped a student. "Well, it's around here, Summers," the student answered. Facing such brilliant evasion, Deacon Jocelyn challenged the student with a follow-up question, and where he asked, "Is it in winter?" The second floor of the Union Academy was home to the Debating Society. Horace Greeley, who began his newspaper career in East Pulteney, gave his first political speeches here in the 1820s, quite likely on temperance, which was one of his early passions, along with abolition. From this beginning at the Debating Society, Greeley's voice and writing would lead him into a renowned career as a journalist and politician. It was Greeley who nominated Abraham Lincoln for the presidency, and Greeley himself was a candidate for president in 1872, in an election he lost to Ulysses Grant. Greeley died before his electoral votes could be counted. The Union Academy served as one of 16 district schools in Pulteney until 1895, when a new regional schoolhouse was constructed across the green. The building was donated to the Pulteney Historical Society in the 1980s and is currently restored as a schoolhouse, complete with desks, books, quill pens, and reproductions of its initial period. To the right of the Union Academy is the Melodeon Factory. This is the oldest remaining building from East Pulteney's industrial era. It began around 1810 as a one-story blacksmith shop, where metal tools, wagon hardware, and mill equipment were forged and repaired, since a town on the frontier needed to be self-sufficient. A second floor was added about 1850 to accommodate a new business, the manufacture of reed organs, known as melodeons. Was becoming a popular instrument in the parlors of America, where music after dinner was one of the few entertainments. Partners Paul Ross and Elijah West planned to assemble and finish what had become the latest trend, a melodeon on legs, like a piano, but less expensive to produce. On the first floor of the factory, the melodeons were assembled and tuned. The second floor was used for varnishing and polishing, and you can still see the playful hand of its workmen in the varnished graffiti on the walls. Ross and West's melodeons gained renown for their high-quality piano finish, and this quickly became one of the most successful melodeon factories outside of Boston and New York. Once again, this village's history was being shaped by a technological innovation. To support this growth, the partners recruited Joseph H. Morse for his energy and business skills. The business flourished under Morse's financial expertise. More men were added to the workforce. Agents sold the melodeons as fast as they were produced. They were so successful that the firm considered new, larger buildings equipped with modern machinery. A mill at the Falls was enlarged to build cases and other parts. But the winter of 1856 was bitterly cold, and in January, ice froze the mill wheel. Morse secured the wheel with planking and began chopping away the ice. But when the wheel freed, it rolled with such weight that it broke the planks, and the wheel crushed and killed the 37-year-old Morse. With the loss of his entrepreneurial vision, the business began to dwindle. By 1864, the factory had closed its doors. Today, the Melodeon Factory is maintained by the Pulteney Historical Society as a museum and houses several of the Society's permanent exhibits. The building underwent extensive renovation in 2008. The second floor was temporarily raised several inches, allowing many of the disintegrating first-floor bricks to be replaced. The masons worked to match the colors of the original bricks, and those old bricks can now be seen in the interior walls. Next, walk to the right of the old watering trough where early motorists once refilled their Stanley steamers. Cross Main Street at the crosswalk and walk left on the sidewalk. As you walk this sidewalk, look around and you'll see nearly a century of village architecture. On the green, the dominating presence of the Baptist Church, built in 1805, depicts the federal style popular in the early 1800s. To our right, We see the end of the century in the 1896 schoolhouse, which is noted for its Queen Anne style, a style popular in the late 1800s. Continue walking until you stand in front of St. John's Episcopal Church, built in 1832. It, too, was designed and built by Elisha Scott, but this time he used a Gothic Revival style. What's Gothic about this style? The pointed window arches, the steep gabled roof, the pinnacles on the belfry, all these signify the Gothic style. Yet its simple white clapboard echoes the federal style of the Baptist Church. The Gothic Revival style drew its inspiration from a romantic medievalism and was considered most appropriate for rural locations, compatible with natural settings because of the scale of its multiple gables and wide porches. Here, set back from the road and within trees, the design fits the locale. Inside the church, boxed pews were designed to keep the parishioners warm in this unheated building, still lit by an oil lamp chandelier. A hint of rural atmosphere remains. From the pews, you look up to a beautiful sky-blue ceiling. Next, return toward the green and pause at the 1896 schoolhouse. East Poultney is a town that was built over the course of a century. It changed from the frontier into a village that supported agriculture and industry, and the frontier continued to move west, in part because of Horace Greeley's popularization of the advice, "Go west, young man." And here at the 1896 schoolhouse, we see this century and a century of construction coming to a close with a splash of colors typical of the Victorian era and its ornate painted ladies, these fancy houses that are also seen on the streets of downtown Poultney. Built in 1896 in Queen Anne style, this school represents an exaggerated nostalgia for British architecture. During the late 1800s, architects returned to New England to study its classic Georgian buildings. At the same time, new technologies allowed architects to use ornate colors, seen here in the three-tone paint, and to use geometric patterns made possible in part by the introduction of machine lathes. The result is this schoolhouse, the last major building constructed on the green. It offers the simple patterns of Queen Anne style, such as the small paned lattice of the windows and the straight lines of the roof. The designers created a sense of depth through the fish scale patterns of the shingles, the filigreed detail in the upper gables, and fan lights framing a recessed entrance. The 1896 schoolhouse accommodated 8 grades, 4 in each downstairs classroom, with an auditorium on the second floor. It was one of 4 schools that consolidated students from one-room schoolhouses around the larger township, and it served its students till 1966. Today it's maintained by the Poultney Historical Society and houses its offices and research library, as well as the bulk of its historic collection. Continue your walk by crossing the road. Walk the green toward the East Poultney store and stop at the corner of the green across from the store and the Eagle Tavern. Now in these last few buildings, we've taken a journey into the industry, churches, and schools built by and for the villagers of East Poultney. This green, though, the gathering place of the village, offers a rare glimpse back to colonial times. Here at the crossroads of the Military Road, the Green Mountain Boys once gathered. These frontier-hardened fighters shared a passion for defiance, even rebellion. The most famous of the Green Mountain Boys was Ethan Allen, who was at one time or another a land speculator, gang leader, gadabout, and leader of the patriotic fight. In the claims over these land grants, Allen argued that those who worked the land for their families had a greater right to it than the New Yorkers, who had claimed but not yet settled these contested lands. From here, in 1772, Allen and the others sent out a poster of defiance, and set up what was considered by many an independent state of grant holders in defiance of the Royal Province of New York. So when the Revolutionary War began, Pulteney citizens found themselves front and center. In 1775, just weeks after the Battle of Lexington, the support of these Green Mountain Boys proved key in the capture of Fort Ticonderoga, northwest of Pulteney. Ethan Allen shared leadership of the attack with Benedict Arnold, and the surprise pre-dawn victory occurred with barely a shot fired. One soldier remembered Arnold's command to the sleeping British commander, "Come out of there, you goddamned old rat!" The captured cannons were transported on ox-drawn sleds past this green en route to Boston. There they proved key to George Washington's victory when he forced the British to evacuate Boston in 1776. Now walk to the front of the Eagle Tavern. During colonial times, the Eagle Tavern was a type of inn known as a stand, one that hosted weary passengers from stage wagons and coaches, and it was a famous haunt of the Green Mountain Boys. But as the war continued, both the tavern and the town were briefly abandoned in 1777 as the men headed north to fight the British at the Battle of Hubbardton. As the men went off to fight, the women and children evacuated the town. These women became known as the Valiant 13. They took their children to safety by traversing more than 50 miles on foot from Pulteney to Bennington through rough and untracked wilderness. Their bravery is celebrated annually on East Pulteney Day with a historic fair on this green the second Saturday of August. Though the British won at Hubbardton, they suffered such casualties and delays that the American forces had time to prepare for the battles at Bennington and Saratoga. American victories there led to the surrender of the northern half of the British Army, removed the threat of a northern invasion, and encouraged France to enter the war as our ally. The fervor of this patriotism was commemorated in an infamous toast first offered at the Eagle Tavern, where Captain William Watson raised a glass to "The enemies of our country, may they have cobweb breeches, a porcupine saddle, a hard-trotting horse, and an eternal journey." This is the history that passed through the Eagle Tavern and Inn. The inn you see here was reconstructed in 1790, not exactly a recent renovation. It's a striking representation of Federal-style architecture, including columns crafted from local pine. The original stone foundation remains, and the use of stone proved so emblematic to this era and region for building house foundations and field stone walls that the Eagle Tavern even offered a libation, a favorite of Ethan Allen's called the Stone Wall, a blend of imported rum and local hard cider. This is also the inn where Horace Greeley boarded from 1826 to 1830, as he began his career as a printer's devil. And it's where our next story begins, with the friendship of two editors, a friendship that took root in the general store. Walk a few feet to the East Pulteney General Store. Here, at the village's general store and post office, you see a stone marking the site of Vermont's first library. In 1790, a wing of the village store housed a subscription library, $1.50 to purchase a share and 75 cents a year, not an inconsiderable sum in those days. The young Horace Greeley, a voracious reader who was referred to as the town's encyclopedia, would claim that he'd never seen so many good books. This store, the library, and the nearby newspaper were all run by Amos Bliss. Greeley had read of an apprenticeship available at the Northern Spectator and approached Bliss as he was planting potatoes. In spite of, or because of, his boldness, Horace got the job. Another boy worked here at the store, a young clerk named George Jones, who was born in Pulteney in 1811, same year as Greeley. These two boys, Jones and Greeley, working beside the green, became lifelong friends. Toward the end of his life, Jones would tell fond stories of these times. One fine Sunday, Greeley persuaded me to go with him on what he called a loafing expedition. When chastised for his absence from church, Jones replied, "I've been over the hills with Greeley, studying nature." From the store, walk along the row of houses toward the river again. In this row of village homes, you can again note the use of Palladian-style doors and windows. A few homes down, you'll come upon a vernacular house, typical of its place here in East Pulteney, yet one that houses history far beyond its walls. It was built in 1823 for a variety of businesses, a harness shop, a law office, and the print shop on the second floor that published the Northern Spectator. This is where Horace Greeley learned the craft of publishing and befriended his future colleague. When their paths crossed again in New York City, Greeley would claim, "My friend George Jones is good as the Bank of England." And he offered Jones a job at his newspaper, the New York Tribune. But Jones, having come to know too well of Greeley's casual bookkeeping and frequent gift-giving, at first refused to work at the Tribune. Eventually, he did sign on in the business office, where he met his future publishing partner, Henry Raymond. Raymond was a reporter, renowned for pioneering the fact-filled and detail-oriented journalism that defines the craft to this day. After a short stint in the business office, Jones became a banker and then partnered with Raymond to co-found the New York Times in 1851. Their paper gained fame, in part by exposing the corruptions of boss Tweed. Jones recounted a visit by one of Tweed's partners in crime who offered $5 million if the Times would not print a particular story. To which Jones replied, "I don't think the devil will ever make a higher bid for me than that." The emissary of boss Tweed continued, "Why, with that sum, you can go to Europe and live like a prince." "Yes," said Mr. Jones, "but I should know that I was a rascal." And Jones refused the offer. For a different reason, a great business opportunity, even his old friend Horace Greeley offered to buy the Times. To which Jones replied, "I shall never sell the Times as long as I am on top of the ground," a promise he kept. Though the paper Jones co-founded may be more familiar today, so much of what we think of as modern journalism began in the pages of Greeley's Tribune. For much of the mid-1800s, it had the largest newspaper circulation in America. From its pages, Greeley pursued many of his social causes: temperance and vegetarianism, universalism and transcendentalism. He was an early promoter of Thoreau. He formed and became president of the first printers' union and supported Lincoln, yet harangued him to pass the Emancipation Proclamation. From these pages, Greeley also popularized the westward migration, echoing and expanding on a phrase first offered by a colleague and reprinted in the Tribune: "Go west, young man, and grow up with the country." And so the two leading national newspapers of their time were launched by impoverished, rural, teenage friends who met here on the green in East Pulteney. Let's walk back to the Bell on the Green, where we began our tour. Listen as you walk. Greeley's passion for social issues began apparently on the green. One event here may have resulted in his leadership of the abolition movement. A quarter century before the Civil War, when a New York slave owner arrived in Pulteney to reclaim and recover the chattel goods, a young slave, Greeley observed that, "I never saw so large a muster of men and boys so suddenly on our village green, and the result was a speedy disappearance of the slave and the return of his master disconsolate to the place whence he came. Everything on our side was impromptu and instinctive, and nobody suggested that envy or hate of the South or of the master had impelled our rescue. our people hated injustice and oppression and acted as if they couldn't help it. This was life on the green, where the ordinary daily routine was punctuated by extraordinary acts that helped us define our freedom. Later, with the war raging between the states, Lincoln would claim that having Greeley firmly behind me will be as helpful to me as an army of 100,000 men. But in August of 1862, Greeley was calling for emancipation of those still held in slavery. In his editorial, A Prayer for 20 Millions, Greeley wrote a public letter to Lincoln. On the face of this wide earth, Mr. President, there is not one disinterested, determined, intelligent champion of the Union cause who does not feel that all attempts to put down the rebellion and at the same time uphold its inciting cause are preposterous and futile, and that every hour of deference to slavery is an hour of added and deepened peril to the Union. A month later, after Antietam, the bloodiest one-day battle in American history, Lincoln issued his preliminary Emancipation Proclamation to take effect on January 1st, 1863, and free the slaves in the states rebelling against the Union. Well, this is the end of the guided portion of the East Poultney walking tour, but there's more history around us. Head northeast of the Green, up Town Hill Road, and you'll pass the site of a cheese factory, a key industry for dairy farmers, particularly before refrigeration. Farther up Town Hill Road, you'll come to a stone marking the site of the first Union church in Vermont, the East Poultney Cemetery, the oldest in Poultney, and the Jewish Cemetery, the oldest in Vermont. You might also walk west along Main Street, that's Route 140, to view an additional 20 homes constructed from 1810 to 1850 in the East Poultney Historic District. And finally, we invite you to follow the other tours in this series, Main Street Poultney and the Poultney Driving Tour. Together, these audio tours explore the Poultney area, a region that embodies the history of small towns in America. The Destination Poultney Tours are brought to you by the Poultney Historical Society, the Town of Poultney, and Green Mountain College, and are supported in part by a Preserve America grant administered by the National Park Service, Department of the Interior. For more information on the audio tours and other attractions, drop by the Poultney Visitors Center at the Stone Bridge in downtown Poultney.